com.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
John Fredrick, has Donald Trump not taught these Republicans anything? The way you win is by standing and fighting. Everything that came up against them, he has stood and fought for. You may hate him, you're anti-Trump, I get it, but you have to admit, this president fights to the death for what he believes in. That's how he's been able to win. That's what got elected.
Stay connected online and take him wherever you go. To get the free John Frederick Show app, follow on Twitter at JF Radio Show.
And instead, it's like the party of the Whigs. That's how you lose. This whole thing is ridiculous. Thanks for being with us. Good news today. The good news is, in the name of Denver Riggleman, Congressman, Republican from the 5th District of Virginia. That's the whole South Side. Bigger district than New Jersey. Biggest in the Mid-Atlantic. Republican and Denver Riggleman with us now. Congressman Riggleman, great to have you back, sir.
Good morning, and I'm headed down there this weekend to El Paso.
You're going to El Paso, right?
So I'm pretty excited about that.
All right. Where will you be?
So we're going to start El Paso. I don't know if we're going to go see EPIC, the El Paso Intelligence Center, but we're going to be at certain places along the border, not only looking at what the security posture is, but actually facilities and detention facilities. So I can't exactly tell you where I'm going to be at this point, but I can tell you this. I can tell you afterwards. So it'll be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, we'll do that. I'll be in El Paso, too, this weekend. I don't leave till Sunday afternoon, so hopefully we'll hook up. Yes, we might just...
If you're there Sunday, I would love to give you a call.
You'd probably do that, because I'm going to be hanging around. I think my flight out is around 1 or 2 p.m., so definitely do that, Denver Riggleman. I got to get to the Mueller hearings. You were there in Congress yesterday. What did you think of the whole thing, sir?
Well, I think we've been right since the beginning. You know, I have a dog-eared copy of the Mueller report, John, as you know. Went through the entire thing, and I knew in Volume 1 that they had a problem. When you saw that, so what I did is I went through and actually underlined every single excerpt in the Mueller report. I'll show you my book one day, John. I think you'd be like, oh, my goodness, you did a lot of work on this. But every single excerpt that said there was no evidence, lack of evidence, couldn't verify, couldn't validate, right, or couldn't correlate. You're talking over 50 times. I don't know if you heard that, 50. Mm-hmm. And so when you start looking at this as not only somebody who's done strategic intelligence but had to actually do message traffic analysis and actually look at how people are stating things, you start to see, okay, great, you did this investigation, but there's no way that this reached the threshold of anything when it comes to collusion or even obstruction of justice. If you go through Volume 2 through Volume 5, there's no way that it actually does this. So I think what you saw yesterday with some of my good friends, I don't know if you saw John Ratcliffe.
Yes.
He did.
Yes.
Jim Jordan.
Yes.
Kelly Armstrong. Ben
yes.
Klein, my good friend Ben Klein from Virginia. And when you saw Mueller, I guess I was actually, because I was in a, by the way, I was in a hearing also for the, which is pretty huge for Virginia, which nobody cares about, which is the real work, which was the BB&T and SunTrust merger, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
is one of the biggest, you know, bank holdings, right, on the East Coast, and Virginia is a huge part of that. So I was going back and forth between my hearing and following the Mueller hearing. But I guess, John, and I think it surprised you too, is just how inadequate and unprepared the prosecutor was. I was stunned by it. And also, I think it validated everybody's thought that this investigation wasn't led by him. And this investigation maybe might not have been done in good faith. And I think that's where we're at this point.
When you say not done in good faith, elaborate on that, Denver Riggleman.
Well, you know, probably out of Congress, there's not a lot of people who presented that type of evidence, but I'm one of them, right? When you're talking FISA and when you're building packages. And when you actually start from a basis of falsehoods or a basis of something that might not be completely correct, if you have an unstable, sort of an unstable, I guess, evidence train to actually start these types of investigations, it collapses in on itself. And the fact is, if this is, and I think it was politically motivated, when it's not done in good faith, those evidence trains can start to collapse upon themselves, and I think mm-hmm. you saw that yesterday.
So, is it over?
It's over. Yeah, it is. This is over. It's time to move on. It's over. Not only is it over, I think even the American public, especially in the 5th District, these are not stupid people. These are intelligent people that know there's much bigger issues in a politically motivated study or investigation, and it is over. And I think that was evident yesterday.
Denver Riggleman with us, Congressman, Republican, 5th District, Virginia. Denver, let me ask you this. A lot of people think now that the investigation turns the other way and that William Barr, is not going to mess around. Horowitz is involved, the inspector general. He named Durham, U.S. attorney in Connecticut, to look into the investigators, Clapper, Brennan, Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, et cetera, people that were unmasked, Powers, perhaps, Rice. Is that going to be real? A lot of our callers today say, and Sheriff Clark was on, said, you know what? It's a big swamp there. They protect each other. Barr's going to go through the motions. Maybe there'll be some scapegoat, but nothing will ever come of it. True or false?
I think we've already sort of, you know, when I ran, you remember when I ran, John, I said, we got to drag the vampires into the sunlight.
Yeah. Right.
I think we've done that yesterday. I think you started to see that, and you saw this anger, and it was righteous anger about, listen, you know, these are attorneys. I don't know. Again, I know you watch John, and I know you watch Ben and Jim and just some of the quick Greg Stubbe. I mean, you do know these are all attorneys and very good ones.
Yes.
And they parsed through the Mueller report just like I have. And you don't have to be an attorney to see some of the gaps there. So the first thing I would say, John, is I think we've already proved that there were a lot of issues with those that actually try to present evidence for this type of investigation. But the second thing is this. I think Barr has come across as a man of integrity, and I got a feeling that he's going to pursue some of this. But now that the Mueller report and now that Mueller himself, what you saw yesterday, I think there's going to be some calculations, I think, from the Republican Party, too, that this country's ready to move on. We've identified, you know, who the culprits were, pretty much, and I think it's time to move on. I think even you're seeing that within the Republican conference. Everybody is like, we actually want to work for the people. Look at the bills that are coming up. Let's start to identify and highlight the work that we're doing in Congress and not this sort of hyperbole and emotional outburst that we've had from the left since the beginning. So it's going to be interesting, John. It's interesting that, you know, the sheriff said that, but I think he might be onto something. I don't think it's protecting each other. I think there might be a move on, you know, type of, you know, walk away from this and actually do work for the American people, for the Republican Party, and I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I think those that perpetrated this, and as you said at the beginning of your segment here, you said that it was based on very sketchy information, to put it lightly, at the beginning. You know, people should be held accountable for this. A lot of us
should. Oh, I agree. Don't get me wrong. I agree. I just wonder. I was just sort of a theoretical on, you know, how far will the administration want to go with this?
Right.
But it's been so vicious.
Right.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. The integrity of Barr, I think you're going to see an investigation. I just wonder how far they want to go.
Right.
For me, I'm always interested in the chain of evidence, right? I'm interested to see what the source was on this.
Right.
And to actually go through everything, every single jot and tittle, to see what's going on here. That's me being an analyst, right, and being an ops. Like, that's something I want to see.
We're with Denver Riggleman, Congressman, Republican, 5th District, Virginia. Denver, the president negotiating a budget deal with the Democrats to raise a debt ceiling, which would raise our deficit by hundreds of billions of dollars, much to the chagrin of many fiscal conservatives.
$1.7 trillion on the debt deficit's not good. I mean, it's going to be interesting with the vote and what's coming out right now, I can tell you that.
Are you going to vote for it?
No. I appreciate the negotiations of what we've tried to do, but they couldn't give us. We needed $500 million or $500 trillion in offsets. We couldn't get the offsets. And it's amazing to me. I don't know if you know this. I'm a member of the Republican Study Committee, and we actually parsed through all the numbers. And at this point, looking at the rise, I think this will be a no for me, and I think it's going to be a no for many, many Republicans, not because we don't support the president or the budget or what we're trying to do. It's just interesting to me that we're not worried about the mandatory spending over discretionary. It's interesting to me that right now mandatory spending is 72% of the budget. And we're also sort of, you know, the discretionary spending is also just putting it on us when it comes to the debt and the deficit. And I'm just so worried about where we're at as far as fiscal responsibility that this one's going to be tough for me to vote for.
So one of your colleagues yesterday said something interesting. They said, here's the problem with these. There are about 40 Republicans in the House of Representatives, you being one of them, that will vote no on this budget. And he says, as a result of that, that doesn't give the Republicans enough votes to pass anything. So then what happens is they have to negotiate further with the left. So the budget gets bigger and it gets more liberal because they need the liberals to put it over the top because they know they're not going to get 40 to 45 conservative votes. And he said, actually, the people that vote against it, the Republicans, because they say it's too much, it's fiscally irresponsible, that vote actually makes the budget more fiscally irresponsible because then they have to get that many more Democrats in that negotiate other spending that they want. How do you respond to that?
I respond to that by, first of all, that's an interesting viewpoint, right, that that we should vote the way we shouldn't vote because we think it's going to get worse.
That was Scott Taylor's
view. I absolutely disagree with that. And by the way, there's a lot more than 40 that are going to be voting against this budget bill. So to say that it's only 40, not true at all. I think we're looking at 80 to 90, maybe 100. So that's the first thing. The second thing is this. So do we constantly go down the slippery slope by some kind of theoretical? And when you look back at what I've done in my life, so here's what we're saying then. So we're saying that anything we do in life, we might as well take the worst deal we can because it's only going to get worse. That is something I reject out of hand, even if I like this individual or not. I would argue that probably up the hill is that, so what do? So do we back down every time based on the fact that we're getting worse budgets? And by the way, when the Republicans held the House, they certainly didn't do a very good job either of controlling the debt or deficit. So I would actually go back and say, oh, so when we were controlling the House, what did we do with the debt or deficit? So are you saying that we were actually negotiating with ourselves with worse members within the Republican conference? Now you get into an argument that's unwinnable by that specific line of attack, and that's where I'm at on it.
Okay, so the other argument, though, is that if you don't get an agreement, you're going to be faced with another government shutdown at the deadline. And we've already been down that path multiple times. And every time there's a government shutdown, Republicans get screwed and they lose. And if you look at the Virginia elections, Denver Riggleman in 2019, a government shutdown basically puts the Democrats in charge of everything, and they'll have that for a generation. So a lot of people saying, why would you do that again? This is the best deal we can get. Let's fix it in 2020, reelect the president, get a Republican Congress, and then we can fix it. But right now, this is the best deal we can have because the alternative is a Republican Armageddon in Virginia and then even in 2020.
Nah, I reject it. I think what people are looking for is integrity in their votes, not in always doing some type of political calculation. And the second thing is, by the way, this is actually going to pass. You know, I think the Republicans only need 30 votes, and that's actually what the baseline for us is to get to those 30 votes. So there's a lot of other calculus here, but the thing is that if they get 218 in the House, my guess is the president's going to sign it. And he's not perfectly happy with this bill, trust me. I think he's going to sign it, but there does come a time where, you know, you're loyal to the Constitution and to vote the way that you think you need to vote based on your belief systems and how you represent your district.
So you
and
think
that's what the House is all about.
So you think that 100 Republicans can vote against this budget and it could still pass?
Absolutely.
Then it's a Democratic budget, which was everything. That's exactly what Scott Taylor was saying. So you basically pass it with 30 Republicans, all the Democrats, and basically you have a Democratic budget because you need all the Dems.
Well, you got to remember, Republicans didn't put a whole lot of amendments into this. And by the way, most of the Republican conference didn't negotiate the deal. So now you have another issue, is this the right way to go about things? Mm-hmm. Where you have most of the conference actually outside of the negotiating process, where it gets pushed down from specific, you know, parts of the conference, and then you have to deal with it. Because I have to go back and explain why I think it's okay to keep kicking the can down the road every single year based on some kind of political calculation that's already gotten us to $22 trillion in debt.
Hmm. I understand. Well, look, I think from my perspective,
It's tough to do this job. It's a real job, right?
It's
and it's real work and it's real study. And you have people that all love their country, you know, trying to do the right thing. You know, and I've taken tough votes, as you know, and for the president. But I'm not loyal to the president, right? Specifically, I'm loyal to the Constitution. And that is my job, right? I represent the 5th District, the Constitution, right? And that's what I do. And loyalty to the president's commander-in-chief, yes. Loyalty to all theories and concepts, no. It's the Constitution. And that's the thing that I hope people remember, is that the representatives should be representing the Constitution and the constituents the best they can, and they got to take tough votes. And it's an awful thing sometimes, but you got to do it.
All right, Denver Riggeman, I see where you're coming from. Just I look at this politically, and from a political, pure
I know,
political
and I,
standpoint.
And I, listen, you have to a bit, right?
I have to.
You certainly have to.
I've lived. I've been on the radio during these government shutdowns, and every time we've had them, it is a complete disaster for Republicans. It destroyed and especially for Virginia Republicans, because it always happens when they're coming up for election. And if there is a government shutdown in October of 2019, you're going to lose the Senate. You're going to lose the House of Delegates, and you're never going to get it back. And so Virginia is going to be blue for a generation. And all because of a shutdown that I think there's somehow that should get avoided. Look, Rob Whitman has been hammering for this for the 8 years I've been in the air when he says this never should come down to the end. It ought to be all worked out in the spring and the summer. But here we are again.
Totally
if we don't get this deal.
Totally agree.
If we don't get this deal, we're going to be fighting over a government shutdown again, which every time we do that, Republicans lose.
Well,
that's
I tell you right now, I don't see a shutdown actually happening,
right?
Which is you know, interesting. I just don't see a shutdown happening, John. And actually, like, you can almost take it to the bank. There's not going to be a shutdown. And I think also at some point, people who've been in this game a long time are always looking down the road with some kind of calculus that they think is going to help get somebody elected, or say the House or the Senate or whatever. I think our calculus has to be making the right decision on that legislation moving forward. And I think you're seeing a lot of the new freshman class doing that calculus, too, that have not been in politics, that are business leaders, that are military. At some point, you have to have integrity in your votes and the way that you're going forward. And that's why I think you're seeing this. And I don't think it's a bad thing, John. But that's, you know, that's my opinion on it.
I mean, look, Denver, here's the thing. It's tough to sit here and say we're going to raise the debt by another $1.7 trillion. We have a Republican president that ran a business, and yet every single agency gets more money, right? Every single one, right down the line. Everyone got an increase. You know, for a lot of us, that is that is a very tough pill to swallow. And what you got the president saying is, look, I have a Democratic Congress. I don't want to shut the government down. I've got to get through a reelection. Let's just go forward. Let's get it done. And then I promise to do it in 2021. Now, I'm fine with that. A lot of his detractors are saying, well, wait a minute, Mr. President. The last time you signed an omnibus budget, you said you'd never do this again. Now you're doing it again. But then you have the political reality of it. So,
John, you just went back and forth on the same argument we just had.
Exactly. That's why, right? it's a tough argument. I would vote for it. I would vote for it because, look, if Trump doesn't get reelected and you don't get a majority in Congress in 2020, we're going to have a lot bigger problems than another $1.7 trillion on the debt.
Well, Trump's going to get reelected. I mean, I guess I'm not that worried about that. And I think when you look at the debt and we look at reelection, I think we also got to worry about the people who have to carry this debt, mm-hmm. and the cascading effects of taxes, inflationary measures. At what point do we hit the bubble? And again, that's my job, right, is to take these tough votes and to also support the president, to support the party, but mostly to support the 5th District and the Constitution. And again, I think that's our job, is to take those tough votes, make those tough decisions. And John, listen, you know, there's going to be a lot of discussion about this today. And if there's more offsets or amendments that are provided that allow me to rationalize that it's good for the 5th District and the Constitution, my mind can be changed, right, with negotiating and compromise from integrity. But without the offsets and the fact that some of the issues that are in there that are very, you know, very contentious issues in the budget, it's going to be hard for me to vote for it.
All right, Denver Riggeman.
Thanks,
we're out of time, but we really appreciate your candor and forthrightness. As always, Denver Riggeman, Congressman, 5th District, Virginia, Republican, says right now he's voting no on the Trump-Pelosi-Schumer budget, which would increase the debt by $1.7 trillion above the, I guess, what is it now, $21
trillion? It's a $22 trillion and growing. Yes.
22. It's good. That brings it up to $24 trillion. I remember asking people when it was $10 trillion, when is it too much? And now it's at 24. It's just it's a frightening number, no question about it. But
it's a big number. But I think the next thing we got to attack is mandatory spending, and we can talk about that next time, sir. I have a 10 o'clock, and I
we
really
will
do
thank
it.
You
I
for being with us.
This incredible interview today.
Thank you, Denver, for being with us. John Frederick's Radio Network.
July 27th, 1953. In Asia, the Korean War ends after more than 3 years of fighting with an armistice signed at Panmunjom. President Dwight Eisenhower tells Americans,
"We think of those who were called upon to lay down their lives in that far-off land to prove once again that only courage and sacrifice can keep freedom alive upon the earth."
To this day, the Korean Peninsula remains divided between the Communist North and the non-Communist South. 1974. In Washington, the House Judiciary Committee votes to recommend the impeachment of President Richard Nixon. The panel charges Nixon with personally engaging in a course of conduct to obstruct justice in the Watergate scandal. Congressman Joshua Eilberg, Democrat of Pennsylvania.
Not only is Richard Nixon guilty of bribery, high crimes, and misdemeanors, but he must be impeached and convicted by the Senate if we are to remain a free, courageous, and independent people.
More than a dozen days later, Nixon becomes the first American president to resign. 1996, terror strikes the Atlanta Olympics. As a pipe bomb explodes at Centennial Olympic Park, killing one person and injuring 111 others. Eric Rudolph, an anti-government extremist, later pleads guilty to that bombing and others in the South. He receives life behind bars. 1980, the deposed Shah of Iran dies at a military hospital outside Cairo, Egypt, at age 60. It happens during the Iranian hostage crisis, when dozens of Americans are held captive for 444 days by the Islamic fundamentalist regime that replaced the Shah. And 2003.
Thanks for the memory of sentimental verse.
Comedian Bob Hope, who entertained Americans and U.S. troops worldwide for decades, dies in Toluca Lake, California. He was 100 years old. Today in history, July 27th, Tim McGuire, The Associated Press.
AM 600. 101.1 FM. WBOP.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. The popular entertainment district where a gunman killed 9 people and injured dozens of others has reopened to the public. The Oregon district was reopened Sunday afternoon hours after the second mass shooting in the U.S. within 24 hours. Police say 24-year-old Connor Betts opened fire in the area at around 1 a.m. Sunday, killing his sister and 8 other people. Police fatally shot Betts within 30 seconds from the start of his rampage. A motive has not been released. Police in El Paso, Texas, say all the bodies have been removed from a Walmart store and parking lot more than a day after the mass shooting that killed 20 people. El Paso Police Sergeant Robert Gomez said Sunday the shooting was confined to the Walmart and its parking lot and that the attack did not spread to other nearby shopping areas. Gomez says that the majority of the victims were inside the store. This is SRN News.
Maybe you'd like to know what exactly Relief Factor is. It was created by doctors. It's a 100% drug-free supplement with 4 key ingredients that simply help your own body deal with the natural inflammatory response that it has. It's easy to swallow, 4 little capsules in each packet, like the packet that I carry with me at all times. 3 packets a day for a week, then 2 packets a day for 2 weeks, and I have just described the 3-week quick start. And you will know in 3 weeks. That's the beauty of it. Whether it works, they don't drag you on. That costs just $19.95. There's a very good chance that a very serious percentage of my listeners suffer from some sort of muscular or joint pain. You should try this for $19.95. That's all you can lose. If it works, they will send it to you automatically. If it doesn't work, tell them not to send any shipments. And it's as simple as that. It is all at ReliefFactor.com. I've been using it for years now. Relief Factor.
Hi, this is Ed Dean. Along with Roger Henderson, our dear friend Teresa Ross is leading a group of friends from the radio station on a tour of the Holy Land this fall. And you are invited to join her on this trip of a lifetime.
Imagine seeing the places we read about in the Bible, visiting the Garden of Gethsemane, getting baptized in the Jordan River, the same river where Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist, and visiting the city of Jerusalem.
Thanks, guys. I'd love for you to come with me to the Holy Land in late October. Our tour will be professionally guided by Christian Expedition. It goes from October 28th through November 6th, a 10-day trip there in Israel. And they're going to show us all the important sites, explain their significance, answer our questions as we experience the land of the Bible. If you want to find out more about that, all you have to do is call this number right now, 904-831-TRIP, 904-831-TRIP. I really hope you can go.
Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, president of Conservative Theological University, invites you to expand your biblical knowledge and earn your certified AA through PhD degree with CTU. If you're considering ministry or if you're already serving in ministry, you should consider completing your studies with CTU, located at 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, in the Mandarin community. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE for your interview appointment today.
To bypass the CNNs and the MSNBCs, to bypass the New York Times and the Washington Post, ABC and NBC and CBS. There's some fellow conservatives out there who are very troubled by this. They haven't even acknowledged what just took place. It's okay. They'll learn to understand. It's not about personality. It's about liberty. That's our watchword, liberty. And I'm very excited about this.
Mark Levin on Talk Radio, AM 600 and 101.1 FM, WBOB.
The John Frederick Show.
Let's go to Big Matt on line 2. Matt, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Jay Fred. I tell you what, Attorney General William Barr is a beast. He gave Bob Mueller a chance to get out of this, and he did it in a professional manner. The Bob Mueller swan song was nothing but a screeching elephant seal on an Alaskan beach. How pathetic was that guy? They tried to make him a demigod. That guy's a dirty cop with a law degree. What do you mean? People are going around saying, he didn't know anything about this. Yes, he did. There's no way he didn't know about GPS. I don't know anything about GPS. What a lie. That's a lie. That guy's a dirty cop. He's a dirty cop. He was almost our attorney general. Could you imagine Bob Mueller, the attorney general, with James Comey as the FBI director, J. Fred?
Scary thought, right?
Scary thought.
You still there?
I lost you, J. Fred. No, there you are.
Okay, you're back. Go ahead. Turn off the radio.
Hey, J. Fred.
Yes.
I tell you what. We have a chance to win both chambers and the White House. Devin Nunes and Jim Jordan 2024, I'm already ready for it. Louie Gohmert was a Gohmert. I don't know if it's Gohmert or Gohmert out of Texas. He was fantastic yesterday.
Yeah, Gohmert. Yep. Yeah. He's been on my show. He's a friend of mine. I'll see him tomorrow in El Paso at the border. But I tell you what, I agree with you 100%. Republicans are going to win the House. They're going to keep the Senate. And Trump is going to win again, only bigger. And I don't know if and I think Mark Warner's in big trouble here. I really do. I think Scott Taylor's going to beat him.
I work for the DOJ, and Warner was one of the, if not the main guy, that talked Rod Rosenstein into doing this.
Yeah.
I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
How do you get there? Like, that's the thing that, like, I understand the criminal mind. You know, you don't just pop into that extreme one day. People build, you know, usually takes time in to build into that type of criminality. These people have done this stuff before to other politicians.
Yeah.
They didn't just start with President Trump. They didn't just start with the president. This is huge. Anyways, I don't know if you know Greg Jarrett. He's always on the legal guy on Fox News.
Yes.
I know he's kind of in the Bush side of things.
Yes.
But yesterday he said that Comey and McCabe were low-hanging fruit. The real problem is Brennan and Clapper. Do you find that to be true? I mean, do you think it goes that high? If it goes that high, that means Obama's responsible.
I tell you what, Corey Lewandowski on my show two times in the last month, and disclaimer, he's my best friend. My studio is in his house in Washington, so we talk a lot.
Great minds think alike, brother.
I mean, Corey says to me, he says, this thing is going to Barack Obama. It is going real high. And if it ain't Obama, it's Biden. And if it ain't Biden, it's Rice. But it's right there in the top three. It went right up there. He said, you don't surveil opposition candidates and transition teams without somebody at that level signing off on it. This thing, he said, is going high, and we're going to find out. I mean, now nobody's above the law, right? You just heard that montage. 18 Democrats saying nobody's above the law. Well, they're not either. And what goes around comes around. This was not an investigation. This was a coup to get this president out of office. It failed miserably because they had nothing. And now there's going to be some hell to pay. And I got a text here from, let's see, who was it? It was Corey in Williamsburg, I think, or someone else said, can't find it right now, but he said Robert Barr's a beast, and I agree with you, because somebody texted in and said, come on, the Republicans aren't going to do anything. They didn't do anything with the Clinton emails. Hey, you didn't know Bob Barr, right? You didn't know Bob Barr. Bob Barr is a beast, and he is going to get this done.
Hey, Jay, right. Can I say one thing before I go?
Yes, sir.
It's very important that your listeners, and I would really appreciate you if you push this. When Barack Obama was campaigning as senator of Illinois, he was huge. He was so big in being against the Patriot Act. Right before President Trump becomes president, he was increasing the powers of the Patriot Act. How do you do that? How do you go from being so against something to increasing the power of the same thing with executive fiat? We have to look into that. I hate saying this because I hate the race card. A lot of Republicans do not want to mess with him because he's African-American, but it's true.
Well, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. No question about it. Thank you, Big Matt. Always good to hear from you. Call in more. Let's get to our good friend Tony from Highland Springs. Tony, you're on the line.
Hey, good morning, John. And,
I'm telling
you, yesterday was like a birthday cake. I watched everything. I watched Mueller stumble and fall. But I want to pick up on your last caller. He said that Mueller is no more than a dirty cop with a college degree. Do you remember the fact that Mueller let two men stay in jail for 11 years, I think it was up in the Northeast someplace, and he knew they were innocent that day he put them in jail? Hello?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but I'm not familiar
what,
with that.
What happened?
I'm not familiar
with
that.
Yeah, he did. Yep. He did that. And I think that was really rotten. And, man, left and right, they have turned over so many cards, and Trump is going to trump them out. I can't wait to see him walk the perp walk right down to Leavenworth, or worse, if you know what I mean.
Bill,
all right, I'm going to sign off, John. God bless you.
All right, Tony.
Thank you for responding to me in the hospital here.
I hope you feel
might
better.
Might be out of here in a little while, but I'm doing better.
You get yourself
Thank
better,
you very
Tony.
Much.
Tony calling in from his hospital bed. Thank you, Tony. You're the man. Get well soon. Get home. We'll be right back.
We need a lawyer to weigh in on this, and we lucked out because Mark Folsom is with us, and he's a lawyer from Nebraska, so we're going to start right there. Not exactly his topic here, but we're going to suck him into it anyway. Hey, Mark, you're on the John Frederick Show. Great to have you, man.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on this morning.
All right, so just quick background. Mark, a Nebraska attorney, he served as chairman of the Nebraska Republican Party from January 2009 to 2013, and he turned the whole state red plus two. Every congressional office, every constitutional office, every statewide office, both houses in the state legislature, all red. The governor red, the senators red. He did it. And but he's also a pretty successful attorney in Nebraska. So, Mark, here, right out of the bat, right off the bat, we've got all the fake newsers running around saying, wow, bombshell. Mueller says it had nothing to do with collusion. Trump said he was exonerated. He's not. What are they talking about?
It's a sideshow, right? The Democrats don't want to talk about their socialist agenda, and so this is a sideshow to distract the American public's attention away from the real issues of the day, which is President Trump's agenda. Trump's done a fantastic job on the issues. I mean, Americans, if you look, the economy's going gangbusters. People, they look at the 401ks, and as long as the economy goes well, they like what President Trump's doing, his appointments to the Supreme Court, and they don't like that. So they're trying to create a sideshow so as to distract attention from what President Trump has done, as well as their own socialist agenda. So I don't expect, despite what the fake news says today, today's a non-news day.
Right. I mean, basically, he said from the beginning, collusion was not a legal term. So now the media is trying to spin it like Mueller saying they didn't investigate that. Well, what the hell did they spend $35 million over 36 months on? Like, what were they investigating if it wasn't collusion?
Yeah, that's the problem with the independent counsel. Often they're given these unlimited license to just go out and look, and we never really know what they're looking at. And this, the investigation, frankly, yielded not much other than what we knew already, which is that the Russians were, in fact, like other outside interests, are trying to interfere with our government. And so that was not surprising. We need to do a better job of protecting ballot security, election security here in the United States, and beef up our defenses in that regard. But the reality is nothing new was learned then. Nothing new will be learned today, despite what the fake news says.
I got a text here from Hus Beyer. One of our listeners just moved to Nebraska. He says, tell Mark, go big red, from Russ, the transplanted Husker. So
we'll take more. We have a great state, solidly red. When I took over as chairman in January 2009, it was right after Obama was elected. The Republicans and conservatives were depressed, and so we put our targets on Senator Ben Nelson, who's a Democrat in the U.S. Senate, and he was the final vote on Obamacare, and we made it our mission to take him out. And he decided to retire. We created an environment in the state where there was no circumstance, no situation where he was going to get reelected. We had it beat.
And that's when you elected Deb Fischer?
Yeah, that's correct.
Right. So Nebraska now, all red, right? Congress?
Right. Our entire federal delegation is 100% Republican. All of our statewide elected officials are Republican. we have a majority, and our Nebraska is a one-house legislature. We're the only state in the country that's a one-house, and we are solidly Republican in that body as well. So, again, it's a solid red state. We're proud of that.
And your governor?
Absolutely. Pete Ricketts is doing a great job. He's in his second term, won solidly re-election. He's term limited after that. And, again, I'm quite confident that his replacement 3 years down the road will be a Republican as well.
We're with Mark Folsom. Mark is the former chairman of the Republican Party of Nebraska, 2009-13, turned it completely red. Mark, the China tariffs that the Trump administration has put on the Chi-Coms in order to, one, get them to the bargaining table, two, get fairness, and three, stop their plundering of our intellectual property. How has Nebraska farmers taken the trade situation with the Chinese? Have they been hurt by it, and what are they saying?
The answer is certainly there's been an impact, but Nebraska's farmers are among the most patriotic people in the world, especially here in the United States. They understand that this needed to be done. You know, about 4 months ago, I attended a presentation by two very liberal professors at University of Nebraska, and a good audience member asked, did this need to happen? And they looked at each other and they said, yes. So they weren't disagreeing with the steps that President Trump needed to take to try to bring our trade balance more, make it more fair. And unfortunately, you know, Nebraska is a huge export state, especially with ag products. And so thus we had to be affected by that. But at the end of the day, our trade environment hopefully will be better. And Nebraska farmers understand they must play a role in that, and they're willing to do that.
Let me ask you this, Mark. The economic impact of the tariffs that the president has put 25% on now about 60% of Chinese goods coming to the country. You're saying that your farmers are patriotic. You know, it's kind of like when we went to war at different times. You know, we stopped buying the products of the people we were fighting, right? Because it didn't make any sense to be able to trade with them. So what you're saying is, yeah, they might be hurt a little bit, but their patriotism has overcome that. Is that my understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. That's both anecdotal as well as empirical. I've seen polling data that among Nebraska voters that they're willing to take the hits as long as at the end of the day we get a better trade balance. And I'm quite confident President Trump will get us there. It's just the Chinese have taken advantage of our country far too long. And let's face it, China is a competitor. They're spying on us left and right. They're stealing our intellectual property. They are not an honest broker in international relations. And the time has come for someone to stand up to them and say enough's enough.
John Frederick's Radio Network, we're with Mark Folsom. Mark is a Nebraska attorney. He's also the former chairman of the Republican Party in Nebraska, where he turned it red. Mark, do you have any plans yourself to run for office?
Right now the answer is no. I'm quite content in my law practice. I still assist in politics when necessary. In fact, the National Republican, the Young Republicans Convention is going to be in Omaha this coming weekend. I'll be moderating a panel up there for that. But, we'll see. I certainly haven't ruled anything out, but right now I'm quite content to just helping Republicans in Nebraska and abroad run for re-election or election.
All right, Mark, let's switch gears to the Middle East. You recently went on a trip to Qatar in the Middle East, one of the Gulf countries, to get a little feel of the blockade, the embargo, if you will, the things that are going on there. Of course, that's where we have the biggest base, the biggest air base in the Middle East. It's now and has always been very critical to our operations there, protecting our interest also for Afghanistan, for various missions now with the Iranian situation that's become that much more critical. Tell me about the experience, what you experienced in your trip to Qatar. What did you learn?
I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have gone to Qatar. Certainly a couple observations. One, I did not have a full appreciation of the blockade and the impact it has had on Qatar. Essentially also the false pretense under which it was brought by its neighboring countries. I'm glad that the United States and the Trump administration has understand the importance of that and has continued to strengthen our relationship with Qatar. Two, with respect to our Air Force base and our presence over there, I did not, again, realize until I went over there the significance of that and what a tremendous presence that we do have. We did go to the base, spent some time there, and thankfully for me, the first the Air Force members that we met touring one of the planes over there, the entire crew was from Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska. So these were folks based in Nebraska who were over there on a mission. And again, what a great thing that the Nebraskans are serving their country not only at home but abroad. And so it was great to see that. Third, I was just amazed at the Qatar economy. Again, they're attempting to diversify. Education City was one of the most amazing educational facilities I've ever seen, with the American universities and British universities over there having facilities and educating folks over there. Finally, it's a beautiful place. The architecture over there was just amazing. A lot of great things going on over there, and I'm very grateful that the United States has a very positive relationship with Qatar.
So when you talk about the Qatar economy, when I was there, one of the things that I did, obviously I'm in media, so it's a little bit different, but I would go walk around during the early evening at the various shops. I went to a couple of their markets. I would go to various eateries and just talk to local people with their families, who were very engaging. And that's where I got the sense of how great their economy was performing. But you're right when you say there's been a transformation within the Trump administration. Remember, the Trump administration did nothing to discourage the blockade by the Gang of Four when it started: Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, and Egypt, because they had kind of bought into the fact that they were being told by our other allies that Qatar was funding terrorist activity around the Middle East. That was 2 years ago. Since then, no evidence has come forward that Qatar's done that. In fact, there's been a mountain of the opposite evidence, which has convinced now the president that the pretense of the embargo itself was false.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we met with a number of U.S. officials all the way over there as well, and they confirmed that. In fact, Qatar, out of all the countries there in the Middle East, Qatar is among the best to work with as far as helping to crack down on terrorism. There's open sharing agreements whereby they alert United States officials in certain bank accounts, bank transactions, things of that nature. And thus, again, our relationship with Qatar, Qatar's efforts in trying to curb terrorism in their part of the world and assisting the United States intelligence agencies in that regard has been of tremendous benefit to the United States. So despite what the Saudis may say, despite what others may say in the region, the reality is Qatar is doing more than its fair share to put a stop to terrorism in that area of the world as well as abroad.
No question about it. And as I've said before, this president might not get everything right the first time, like with the first shutdown we had, right? He doesn't get everything right the first time, but he's a very quick study, and he figures a lot of things out. That's why I think he's gone with a spending plan so we don't go through another government shutdown right before an election, which is going to be a disaster. Mark, tell me a little bit about the experience you had in the Gulf overall. How do you see that blockade being resolved? What was kind of the scuttlebutt that you've heard there?
You know, I know they continue to have talks, so we'll see how that happens. I think it certainly places Qatar in a much better position that the United States has strengthened its position, has not bought the narrative, perhaps, that was put forth initially by the other countries that are blockading Qatar. Also, to the extent they're trying to stop their ability to import certain ag goods, again, the United States has stepped up. I found it interesting that when they were unable to get milk, for example, from the neighboring countries, that what did they do? The emir simply purchased 4,000 dairy cows,
right,
pulled in, built a facility for them to be housed over there. They now have, they're now self-sustainable when it comes to milk. I assume that will also happen with respect to other ag products, so that their people have plenty of food. And I assume the blockade, like many blockades, will fail, because free markets will flow and products will get there, and hopefully the United States can be a supplier to Qatar in many respects.
Well, actually, there's an argument to say their economy is better because they have to diversify it as a result of the blockade.
It's forced to. Yep, absolutely.
And so it's amazing. You know, and I think that when the blockade was done, one of the biggest miscalculations that MBS made, Mohammed bin Salman, was not only the resolve of the Qatari people, but the competence of their ministers, of their government, of their bureaucracy, just pure competence. And if you really trace it back, and you want to study this stuff like I have, you trace it back and you find out that 95% of Qataris have a minimum of a 4-year college degree. So when the government, when their ministries had to react to this blockade, well, they were staffed with a bunch of people with MBAs, master's degrees in economics, things of that, trade experts.
From great United States universities.
Exactly.
For most of them, the ones we met, it wasn't from the elitist, you know, snobbish Ivy Coast or Ivy League schools. It was University of Arizona, Penn State University, University of Wisconsin. And so they went to the heartland of the United States for the schooling. And again, that has benefited them. They have a solid United States education.
Right. And that's why they were able to react to this so fast. And that's what both Mohammed bin Salman of KSA and NBC and UAE, they underestimated the competence of the Qatari government and their various ministries to react to this. They really underestimated that. And as a result, their economy is better than ever. And I don't think they'll ever go back. But the blockade is bad from a humanitarian standpoint because a lot of families have been split up. There's no free travel amongst the GCC like there was. So that's an issue that's got to be resolved. But, you know, with the egos that go on with some of those Gulf countries, it's going to be tough for them to stand down. Hopefully it'll just work itself out and eventually disintegrate. But Qatar's better off, and they've been able to revitalize their relationship with this administration because of facts. The facts is what turned the president from, you know, when the blockade first came up, he basically, I'm not going to say he signed off on it, but he didn't do anything to stop it, right?
Correct.
And so now the Trump administration is actively seeking a way in order to mitigate that. I'm not sure they're going to find a way, but hopefully they'll be able to do that. I've only got one more minute. The final take, can Trump win in 2020? Tell me why or why not.
He will win. As long as the economy continues at the current level or even around this level, he will win. I'm quite confident of it. The only the factor that I think that we need to keep into consideration is if the economy starts to tank, and there are certainly those among the Democrats that want to harm our economy, that want to do such things that would harm our economy, so there's a place President Trump in a position whereby his reelection may be in jeopardy. If the economy continues, he gets reelected, because at the end of the day, in Nebraska and in virtually every other state, while they may complain about certain tweets or certain things President Trump may do, they like what's happening. They like the economy. They look at their 401k. They like the appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court and the other federal courts, and they like it, and they're going to reelect him. And so I'm confident as we stand here today, if he wants another term, he's going to have another term.
All right, we're out of time. I want to thank Mark Folsom for being with us. Mark, thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
You're listening to The John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. Online.